Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
And welcome. Zach By filling in for Mike Evans this morning, hanging out with Troy Rank. Good morning, Troy.
Morning, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I got to tell you, this story yesterday really caught me off guard. The Isaiah Thomas story last night, kind of out of nowhere, Isaiah Thomas signing a one-year, $2 million deal with the Denver Nuggets. What was your initial reaction, Troy?
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Intrigued. It's just amazing that Isaiah Thomas's free fall from grace has plummeted to veteran minimum salary, when it looked like at one point with the Celtics a couple years ago, he was in line for a $100 million contract.
That's right.
And now he's making 1 year, $2 million. You know, the hip injury was unfortunate. I think if he had to do it over again, he would not have played through that injury because it really set him back. I'm intrigued. I need to know more. He played for Coach Malone in Sacramento back in the day.
Yep.
Obviously, Malone was on board with this because Thomas isn't a fit for everyone. But how does it affect and impact Jamal Murray? I mean, Thomas, it looks like, would come off the bench. I mean, obviously, at a veteran minimum. So if he comes off the bench and he's, to date myself, you know, Vinny Microwave Johnson and coming in, instant scoring and gives you 15, 16 a night, I like it. He's limited defensively, but I'm intrigued. I'll leave it with my initial reaction, remain my reaction until I remain more, no more, is I'm intrigued because I like Thomas. I like a lot of guys. Athletes that are 5'8", 5'7", my size, that are competing professionally.
Sure.
But I'm not sure how it fits. But, Zach, I'll put it, I love the second part of the moves, which was moving Kenneth Faried, who did not need to be here for the last 2 years. Once he stopped playing, it was just, again, you're
it's painful, really.
You're a fountain or a drain on teams,
yeah.
And he became a drain. He didn't want
no
to be
question.
Here. They had no role for him. You know, in his height, his heyday, we loved him. High energy, rebound guy, run the floor. But man, when it wasn't right for him, it was just a bad deal. He couldn't even get on the floor, and then he made it known, and it was just, man. I like that part of the deal, even though, as you mentioned in the update, it forced them to give up a first rounder. But I like, that's an addition by subtraction for me.
Troy, there's no doubt about it. You are killing two birds with one stone with that ladder move. And for those who didn't hear at the top of the hour, the headlines there, that according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, Denver will send two veterans, Kenneth Faried and Darrell Arthur, as well as, now unfortunately this is part of the deal, but this is just part of it. It's a 2019 first round pick. Now, a key to this, though, is that we have to remember it's a protected pick. It's a top 12 protected pick. Okay, so you give yourself some level of, you know, sort of like a fail safe there. Okay, it's a salary dump. Denver was upside down. There's no mistake about it. They were upside down, and this move is going to help alleviate financial pressure from the organization because these guys had the Nuggets. Had they kept them, had a combined $21 million. Of Chandler and Arthur's contracts on the books. And what happens then? You're not only paying that money, but you're getting slapped with a luxury tax that is a lot more than the organization can afford to pay after they've already signed Jokic up to a max deal and they've signed Barton up. So it had to happen, Troy.
I didn't even know Arthur was still in the league. That's how, I mean,
it was such a bad contract.
Yeah, I mean, when was the last time he played significant minutes? And again, Faried, we all liked the Manimal back in his heyday. But once he was in, I can't remember, was it the Olympics, right? After the Olympics, he got paid.
Correct.
He somewhere became delusional that he was somehow a star player by being around star players. In open court against guys my size, suddenly made him think he was a star player, and he wasn't.
Had a great Olympics. He had a great Olympics. He was exciting.
He was in transition with nobody guarding him.
Right.
And once he stopped doing those things that you like, which is high energy, rebound, I mean, he came back to the Nuggets thinking he was somehow a star, and it was like, no, he's a niche player, high energy, clean the glass. get the crowd kind of going, and he lost all of that when things weren't aligned perfectly for him. He became a guy who was, for me, it was kind of pouty. He didn't feel
there's no question.
He didn't look like he wanted to be there. And again, Nuggets can't afford to have that. They got to maximize their roster. And then you were paying, it was basically you were paying maximum money for a guy who no longer fit. So, but the Thomas thing, he's such a prolific scorer when right. And if you would, if you're going to tell me he's healthy, I'm intrigued. And I go back to that word. But the hip injury, the hip labrum injury, he never looked right last season.
He didn't. He did. But the thing on the Nuggets' behalf is there's really no risk.
You're right.
You're giving him $2 million for one season of his services. I mean, if it works, then, I mean, you just potentially stumbled upon something that could be special. And if it doesn't work, you move on after 1 year.
I would say there is risk because we saw it in Cleveland that he becomes a malcontent and doesn't fit in the clubhouse, in the locker room, which he did. In Cleveland, it was a joke. He's calling guys out who have won championships and he hasn't.
Yeah.
It was like...
He kept on talking about the Celtics.
Yeah, it was like a mole inside their locker room. Like, dude, you're not on the Celtics anymore.
Yeah.
And you're playing with LeBron James. So if I were me, if it's me, I'd shut up and just play. And part of it, I know he was frustrated because he wasn't healthy. He went through a lot with his sister. He felt like he was done dirty by the Celtics when they said, play, mm-hmm. and we'll reward mm-hmm. you. And then mm-hmm. he played, oh, you're hurt. It was like, I mean, a lot went wrong in his life last year to get him to that point. I admire the story. I admire the perseverance and the resilience and the edge he brings, but you said there's no risk. I'd say there is one risk, that he somehow gets chippy and chirpy over not getting enough minutes and he starts impacting Jamal Murray's development. That would be the one downside for me.
I will give you a point for that. I will give you a point for that, and I will say I will acknowledge that, but I don't think that's going to happen because he knows he has got to be – he has to be everything that an organization would want to sign up for a 5-year, $100 million contract. I think he's going to be walking a straight and narrow. He has a good – he's not a bad attitude guy.
Right, I agree.
He's not like naturally a locker room cancer. I don't think he's in general malcontent. But I think we're going to see the best version of himself, head down, working. I mean, this deal last night, 1 year, $2 million, this is the last thing that he thought he would ever have to do. He thought he would ever have to do, and I can't believe I'm even saying it out loud. I mean, he finished fifth in the MVP voting 2 years ago, averaged 29 points for a Celtics team that was good.
But the offense ran entirely through him.
That's true.
And I mean, I remember back in the day, I'll date myself, when Paul Westhead was coaching the Nuggets, we'd come up from Pueblo and watch a few games. Orlando Woolridge at one point averaged like 30 points a game. I mean, a guy can average big points if you run everything through him. But Thomas, you make an interesting point. He's almost back to where he was as the last pick in the draft.
Mm.
Like, he's tying a knot right here. This is the last vestige for him to have a nice career and get a payday. Cause to go from, I'm gonna get $100 million to the veteran minimum, I mean, in the clear math, it's a $98 million difference. That's jarring.
It really is.
I'm fascinated to see if that makes him go, like you said, I gotta put the blinders on and do a job here to get paid.
There's a lot more to this conversation. We will continue to have it all morning. It is a league-wide story and once again centered on the Denver Nuggets. We have Troy, 3 games left into the All-Star break and one of the hottest team in pro sports right here in our backyard. Gotta bounce off you what is happening with the Colorado Rockies, and we'll do it next. Having a fascinating question here during the commercial break, or not even a question, but just a conversation. The Twitter purge. I didn't realize this was as real as it was in such a short amount of time. And if you have no idea what we're talking about, Twitter has purged its own site of bought and paid for followers. And this is not an indictment on anyone if they did this or whatever. You want to improve your profile and project something about you, and you pay for a service and they'll give you fake followers. Well, Twitter said no. Twitter had enough of it. And you've seen people's Twitter accounts kind of, I mean, geez, Ashton Kutcher lost more than a million followers. Troy Rank is Zach By filling in for the fellas this morning. Oprah Winfrey lost more than, you know, 1.5 million followers. Ellen DeGeneres lost 2 million followers. Shaq lost 1 million followers. Rihanna lost 2 million followers. Here's my question. If these people are so famous and popular, these are the most famous and popular people in the world. Shaq, Ellen, Oprah, Ashton Kutcher. And they're still paying for followers? Troy, help me out with this.
Well, those counts that are in the millions, they could have, you know, a staggering number of bot followers that are trying to influence opinion.
Robot accounts.
There were some media personalities, I use that word loosely, and, you know, Ray Lewis, a sports personality that lost thousands in the Twitter purge that...
Half of Ray Lewis's Twitter account, it literally got divided in half. Stokely had a couple thousand. He's got like 12 followers left. Stop, Stoke. I know he's listening right now, so I'm trying to get him.
I wasn't sure because people were tweeting about it, and so I went and looked. I think I lost like 300-400. I've never bought them. I've never asked people to follow me. If you follow me, I love my Twitter village. They're insightful, and it's
Twitter's great.
It's crafted itself to where we can respectfully disagree. Mm-hmm. If you hate me and you go on there and you troll me, then I don't block a lot of people. But I just mute you. I don't have time for it. Like really, but I've never asked for followers. My account was created in like 07. It was before the magical run by the Rockies, but I didn't run it. It was created by the Post. So that's why I follow like 17,000-18,000 because when the account was created, even though it was my name, anyone that followed the account, they followed back. So then when I took over, you know, kind of control of the account, like in, I want to say 2009, I didn't want to start unfollowing all these people because it's like, why are you unfollowing me? It was like, well, I technically didn't follow you in the first place, but that's why I have an inordinate amount of people I follow, but I love my Twitter account. But there were some people yesterday, let's be honest, it's a little embarrassing. When you start losing, if your account was hypothetically 450,000 and you wake up today and it's 100,000, clearly, there were some mechanics to inflate that number. You bought them.
You bought your phone. Yeah.
And I get it. Like, I understand why, but I mean, you have to be careful too, because there were people in the media we know. They're like, come on, there's no way.
Well, that's the thing. We have, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to call anyone out specifically, but there's, you know, media members that, for whatever reason, and I get it, but, sometimes people have this illusion in their mind that the number of followers is like a projection of where they're at. Does that make sense? Like kind of where I'm at, what stage I'm at. And in order to project that, maybe they'll pay, you know, $100 for, I have no idea how much it would cost, but I've seen some of these accounts that I follow, local media members that, you know, they're losing thousands and thousands of followers. It's just interesting. It's funny. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It's Twitter. It's fun.
The thing about the Twitter account, if someone's has a crazy amount of followers and when they retweet stuff and do stuff and you never see interaction
on their
timeline.
Come on, Troy.
It's like something's going on because you tweeted something really, really insightful or controversial and there's like 6 retweets and you have this inordinate amount of followers. It's like.
Troy, of course.
I mean,
of course. If you have an actively working brain and you know how the site works,
right.
You see a guy who's got 70,000 followers, he gives a Rockies take during a Rockies game and 2 people like it. It's like, wait, how can this many people be interested in your content and not interacting with you whatsoever?
Yeah. That's pretty much my life. They're interested in me, want nothing to do with me at the same time. It's like that line from Clerks is like, I hate people, but I love public gatherings.
There you go.
So, hey, whatever. It's Twitter. I have fun with Twitter for the most part, and it was a purge yesterday.
It really was. And while we're here, follow us on Twitter, at Troy Rank, at Bysline. Appreciate you guys. The Rockies.
Good for you, bud.
The Rockies are one of the hottest teams in pro baseball. They found a way to win yesterday. You know, baseball's funny, Troy. A Wednesday, they score 5 runs in the first inning, 12 runs in the first 3 innings, and 19 total runs, one shy of the Coors record. And then within like 15 hours, they can't tack a run on the board until the 6th inning, but they find a way to win. And here they are, winners of 10 of their last 13 games, and one of the hottest teams in the league.
Listen, they showed mental resolve. They got to 38-42, that ugly loss, June 27th at San Francisco. Ottavino, in my opinion, got squeezed like Charmin in the strike zone. They end up losing. It was 1-0. And you're
that,
like,
yep.
Oh no. Cause that was the stretch. You know, Mark Schlereth and I talked about it on the morning show. 17 game stretch. You got Giants. You got Diamondbacks. You got the Mariners twice. I mean, and they weren't playing well. You're like, boy, this season, they could be sellers. Because if they go, you know, in 17 games and go 6-11, they're out. I mean, they're done. You know, no matter way. Instead, this team, to their credit, and Bud Black has talked about this, and we've been critical of some of his pitching decisions, and that's just nature of baseball. Second guessing in baseball is a national pastime. But they've shown, as he's talked about, mental resolve, mental toughness. They go out and finally play well against the Diamondbacks this season, and particularly at home. They're getting owned by them.
Of course.
Had lost 9 straight at Coors
Field. Franchise record.
To the Diamondbacks. And now all of a sudden you win 2 of 3. You're 2.5 out. You win a series this weekend against the Mariners. Maybe you're 1.5 out going into the All-Star break. Given the basically Dramamine required nature of their season offensively and and pitching, they would take that. And this is where I say, and I love spending other people's money, go get another reliever. This team bowed their back up and said, we're not going to collapse under the weight of expectations. The Rockies have never, ever handled prosperity well. They've never been to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. This team bowed its back and said, no, we're going to hang around. We're going to be in this. Go get a seventh inning reliever, preferably a guy who's pitched in the eighth. But they can't go forward playing this game of every night of try to get to Ottavino Davis and hope for the best if the starter only goes 6. Go get him another reliever.
And they have 3 games left here.
Yes.
That last series against the Mariners. And the Mariners, by the way, who are just a terrific team this year. They're a 58-win ball club, but they haven't been as good in the last 2 weeks.
Right.
They've lost 2 consecutive series, which hadn't happened, I believe, on the season for the Mariners. So see if the Rockies can finish it the right way, go into the break, and then they got the D-backs coming right back out of the break. So
yeah, they control it. A lot of division games. It's the thing. If you can hang around, September's built where you basically play division games down the stretch. So you will control your destiny, but you can't give it away before. And it all goes back to playing well at home. If they can get to 47 wins at home, which is going to take about, we've talked about 750 win percentage throughout, they're going to make the playoffs because they'll get to 88, 89 wins.
And real quick, shout out to Kyle Freeland, who was just great last night at Jackson's in Lodo. We had a 25th anniversary thing. We had trivia and we sat down, Sandy and I did with Kyle. He was great, smart. Humble, has an edge to him. Really, really cool dude. So shout out to him. Wow, what a move was made by the Denver Nuggets, signing a former MVP candidate last night. We'll give you the details next in the Morning Brew.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your Morning Brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to eat lightning and you're going to crap thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat!
Know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What? Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on!
I'm tired of being traded. That's not a good thing, but I just want to be where I want to. I like it here. I mean, it hasn't been as planned, but I definitely want to be here. We have a real chance to win the NBA championship, and I want to be a part of that.
That was Isaiah Thomas talking about his situation in Cleveland. In Cleveland anymore. He is the newest member of the Denver Nuggets, free agent guard. Isaiah Thomas has agreed to a 1-year, $2 million deal with the Nugs. League sources told ESPN this was broken by Adrian Wojnarowski. Troy Rank, Zach Bye hanging out in for the fellas this morning. What do you make of this?
I'm intrigued. Isaiah Thomas 2 years ago was an MVP candidate. In the postseason, he was a terrific performer, averaged nearly 30 points a game, Zach. The guy I saw last year never got over the way he was done dirty in Boston, never wanted to be in Cleveland, could not, his heart was broken and his hip. And he and LeBron clashed. It was like having a mole in their locker room. He goes to LA. It didn't really fit because he didn't want to be a sixth man, and that is my one concern. He played for Mike Malone. He likes Mike Malone. So there's a belief it can work. But is it going to stunt the development of Jamal Murray? Is that worth that? That's the part I need to see. If he's Vinny Johnson, the microwave coming off the bench and scoring, I like that. If it's I need to score 26 points a night to get paid, I don't like that because he needs the ball in his hand too much.
Next in the Morning Brew.
Well, the plan is quite simple. In order for you to be competitive year in and year out and have an opportunity to win a championship, then you need to have a quality organization.
That is the voice of Derek Jeter talking about the Miami Marlins. I don't know if you saw this story, Troy. The Miami Marlins set a new record low attendance on Wednesday night. Troy, they drew just 5,000 fans. Unbelievable. Just a tick over 5,000 to a pro baseball game. I think it was Marlins Brewers. Brewers are a pretty good football, pretty good baseball team this year. What do you make of that?
I love this sad Hulk music. Again, my favorite Hulk line, Mi casa, su casa, el Hulko. He was in the desert, lost, and he got invited into a trailer home. It's one of the great, it was more cheesy than Velveeta. It was so funny. What do I make of it? I'm not surprised. I've been at Rockies Marlins games, and the Rockies, when I covered them those last few years, weren't exactly a great draw. And there was 10,000 announced attendance. It was probably 6,000 in the house. They've stripped it to bare bones. They have a plan in place. I've always said the easiest thing is to tear it down. The hard part's to get good. Anyone can say we're rebuilding, and it buys you time. Our prospects are – the next wave's always coming. I get it. Again, the easy part's tearing it down. The hard part is tearing it down and getting good again. But that's embarrassing. It's embarrassing in every way, and where I get offended was I was here when the Rockies became in existence, and everyone in the country, including Major League Baseball, it felt like the other teams – the Colorado Rocky Mountain region will never support baseball. It's a cow town. There's no market for it. Florida, 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 Florida. It's all we ever heard. Tampa Bay and Miami are a joke markets. And Miami has no more excuse. They have a beautiful stadium.
They do.
I've covered, 16 games or whatever it is. Palace. A palace. Nobody still comes to the games. Nobody. They're a fair weather fan base. They've won 2 championships and still nobody comes to the games. So it's embarrassing. Jeter, he's on notice now. I mean, we'll see. I like Derek Jeter, the player. I don't know about Derek Jeter, the executive. Michael Jordan, I loved as a player. Michael Jordan, the executive, not so much. So we'll see.
And the thing is, Troy, if they're advertising that there's 5,000 fans at the game, it's probably closer to 3,000.
I covered a game of Montreal versus the Rockies the last year of Expo Stadium in Montreal. There were announced attendance, I think, let's say it was 4,000. There were roughly 400 people there. Instead of a cleaning crew, they had a hotel maid come over and clean the stadium by herself.
Stop!
I'm not kidding. She had to clean like 4 aisles. It was like she had the top row of the hotel. There was nobody there.
That is,
it was friends
way
and
too funny.
Friends and family night. Like, nobody there.
Next in the Morning Brew.
Monday's first pitch belted high and deep to right center field. Trumbull going back, way back, going, and gone, goodbye. Bang, zoom goes Harper on the first pitch he sees tonight.
That was Nationals Radio, Bryce Harper highlight there. Home run derby participants. For me, Troy, lacking some star power outside Bryce Harper. You got guys, Max Muncy, Javier Baez, Kyle Schwarber, Freddie Freeman, Jesus Aguilar, Alex Bregman, you know, some good baseball players, but it's not the Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton type of names that I'm used to hearing, Mike Trout, around this contest. What's your interest level in the Home Run Derby?
I like it if it's – they've changed it where the format where it goes more quickly. And I would say, Zach, do you know that the Cubs exist? They have star power. If you're a Cub and you're in this, you are a national figure. Javier Baez will be Domingo Ayala. He will be swinging out of his heels. So he will be entertaining. I guarantee you. And Kyle Schwarber has as much raw power, even though he's dropped about 30 pounds, as much raw power as anybody in the game right now. So, but I would say the star power from this contest is Bryce Harper's hair. That alone. So I'd say number one, Harper. Number two, Harper's hair. Number three, Baez. Four, Schwarber.
I just don't want to see the Home Run Derby go the way of the slam dunk contest. It's not like there's not great slam dunks and athletic dunks every year, but we're not seeing the Jordan, Dominique, Kobe, T-Mac, Vince participate anymore. We're seeing Gerald Green and, you know, Victor Oladipo. I hope that they're able to retain stars moving forward, because my interest, I know personally, will wane a little bit. Next in the Morning Brew.
But what JJ's done I mean, nothing surprises me with JJ. He really cares about Houston. He cares about people. That's a great thing.
JJ Watt, once again, just steps up to the plate, donates $10,000 to the family of a fallen Wisconsin firefighter. This guy, JJ Watt, continues to just embody what is good about a professional athlete.
Remember when he did the thing for Houston, I think his goal was, what was it, like $100,000, $200,000?
Something
like that. Ended up, $30+ million. And it has, in some ways, transformed him because I think he's always been a good guy. But, you know, there was this, some people think it was, is it an eyewash thing? Did he really mean it? And everything that's, you've seen this last year is, it's deep rooted. He cares about people. I've covered Astros games where he was at. You know, we're helping people. I've covered, you know, Texans, Broncos games where, I mean, JJ Watt off the field, I don't know that anyone has had a greater 12 months in the history of sports than he has in terms of, philanthropy / charity. I mean, in the sheer amount, nobody has. So good for him. Good for JJ Watt. You know, everyone always accuses us in the media, those stories don't receive enough attention. I will say his has.
Oh, his has for sure.
Deservedly so, because he has made a real impact in his community.
He has. And for those who would say, and I've heard that sentiment that you sort of touched on briefly, saying that, you know, he's doing it for show. What does it matter? What does it matter to you? He's trying to help.
Yeah, at the end of the day, he's helping.
Right.
However he gets to that, it doesn't matter. And I think he was shocked at the outpouring. And I think it's transformed him, frankly. I've seen a different version of him. Like, I think initially it was like, I just want to help, like a lot of guys. Then I think it's overwhelmed and transformed him, the way he's impacted his community in Houston.
Troy Rengsack by filling in for the fellas this morning. Troy, we are less than a month away from watching the Broncos on a football field again. What matchups are you looking forward to the most this season? Got some interesting ones, and we'll get to it next. We are barreling down the road to training camp. Troy, we will be in training camp here in what, about 2 weeks or so? Just about 2 weeks?
Are we at 15 days? What is today? The 13th?
Yeah. The 13th?
15 days till the opening of training camp, July 28th. I will say this. I always get a little bit of a pit in my stomach. Mark Schlereth asked me that. I think it was last Friday. And I used to in spring training because I was going to be gone for so long. Like, I love spring training, but as that day came closer, it's like I didn't want to leave home.
Like, dreading the first day of school. Like,
yeah, it's 52 days and Scottsdale was, that's great. It's like, yeah, well, not if you have a family, you're married with kids. It's not great to be gone 48 of those days, you know, but this is different because I'm home and you drive back and forth. And I'll say this, the one difference to that is you show up at Broncos camp and it's packed. I mean, the Bronco fans are amazing. Broncos country, I mean, those first couple days of camp and you look out at the grassy knoll.
It's exciting.
It's exciting. There's a buzz to it, you know, and we'll see if they can keep the vibe this year. But yeah, it's right around the corner, man. And this year, again, with Keenum, there's some real optimism. Whether that plays out, we'll see. But they're not playing the American Idol auditions anymore at quarterback.
They are not.
So we'll see, but yeah, right around the corner, my man, right around the corner.
When you look at the schedule, what games stick out to you? What matchups stick out to you?
Well, early, because Vance Joseph, as we talked about, you and I on the noon to three when we were on yesterday, Zach, you know, when you talk about being on the hot seat, I mean, Vance Joseph comes walking into camp with oven mitts on. Like, it's hot. I mean, and that's just the reality of it when he was nearly fired at the end of last season. That's not speculation. John Elway even admitted that they had to kind of think it over, mull it over. So changed the coaching staff, got him a quarterback. And the reason his job was saved is they basically said it wasn't fair to you because your quarterback play was terrible. And it wasn't like Vance Joseph picked Simeon Lynch and or Osweiler.
And to a degree, that was fair. I mean, Vance, there's a lot on Vance's plate in terms of just general responsibility, and we've been fairly critical of Vance, but that one is not on him.
Yeah, he didn't pick the quarterbacks.
He didn't.
He didn't.
And that's kind of important.
So when you look at games that jump out, I mean, to state the obvious, those two home games right out of the chute, Seattle and Oakland, the Broncos, you know, go 0-2 there. I mean, speculation is going to be, is Vance going to make it?
And
to
both of those games
October?
Are at home.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They're at home. I look forward to Seattle. Russell Wilson, I've known since he was with the Rockies. He's a tremendous player. He's a fun watch. I think that's a winnable game for Denver because it's home, but I look forward to that one. At Baltimore, I bring that one up only because that's where the season started to spin a bit on the Broncos at Buffalo last year.
Week
a game
three.
They clearly should have won, and they gave it away. Kansas City, Zach, when was the last time they beat Kansas City?
September.
Was Hank Stram coaching?
September 17th, 2015 is the last time.
The Jamal Charles football game.
1,031 days ago.
And that, if I remember correctly, that was the Jamal Charles game.
Correct.
Where Peyton Manning was raging against the dying light. It was one of his last great games in the NFL where they were down 14-0. They're trying to play him under center, and it just looked like a giraffe on roller skates. Like, this is not working. And they went two-minute drill. And you saw the magic of Peyton Manning. Even at his worst hurt, plantar fasciitis, he could run a two-minute drill like it was artistic.
My best friend Peyton Manning.
And he ran it. And they got back into that game, and Brandon Marshall broke his finger, causing a fumble. Jamal Charles, Bradley Roby picks it up, runs it in, and you're like, wow. I can't believe they won that game, and they haven't beaten the Chiefs since.
They have, Troy, the Broncos have literally won a Super Bowl since the last time they beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
And the bigger problem is they haven't won an AFC West road game.
Correct.
Since Peyton Manning retired.
Correct.
You can't just every year walk in and go, oh, those three losses. Like, they need to win beat Oakland and then try to win one of two against Kansas City and or the Chargers. You win two of those three on the road, this season looks dramatically different for me.
You know what? That's going to be a tall task.
I don't think. I mean, they're not going to be favored at Kansas City or the Chargers.
Absolutely not.
But you got to beat the Raiders this year. The Centrum Silver and Black. You got to beat that team. I mean, again, I like John Gruden. I'm not sure what they're doing, but that's a team you got to beat. And I say that just because you're not going to be favored. 100% certain you're not going to be favored at Kansas City and at LA, the Chargers. But I love the Kansas City game. And I mean, come on, the Aqib Talib Bowl.
The Rams.
Week 6. Wade Phillips is coming back. Aqib Talib's coming back. I root for the story in the media. That week's got no problem with stories. Wade Phillips will have a few digs. Trust me.
There's no question about that.
He's got the shovel out. He's going to have a few digs in. And Aqib can't help himself. And he likes those dudes, and those dudes like Aqib. But there's going to be a little bit of John going back and forth.
Neither of us will miss a snap this season. But if I said you could watch one game, all season long, is that Week 6 against the Rams the game?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, in terms of entertainment, the week buildup, yes. If watching one game, I don't know. But I would say, I'm going to say yes. Because Talib, there's no telling what Talib will do. And I love that about him. And again, I'm not his teammate. But he's unpredictable. He could have the best game of his career. He could get smoked on a deep route. And it could be, it's on. There's just no telling what could happen in that game. That's a fascinating game. The problem is the Broncos have to make it matter. You can't arrive at that game 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? You can't arrive at that game at 2-4.
Nope. And if they do, I'm not sure Vance will be the head coach of that game.
Right. I agree.
I'm not
that.
Sure.
Because the way that the schedule sets up, it's almost as if when they built the schedule, they built the schedule with Vance in mind. Three of their first games are at home. Seattle at home, Raiders at home. You go to Baltimore, and then you have the Chiefs at home. So you have an opportunity to start 3-1 there. And I think that should be the expectation. If you're in a win now mode, and this is supposed to be a get right season, and three of your first four games are at home against the Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Seahawks, 3-1 should be the expectation, in my opinion.
Well, here's the problem. If it's not, that's where you can then question the Case Keenum acquisition of why you didn't just go young in the draft and go with a quarterback. Because if you end up 6-10 with Keenum, the criticism then will be, why didn't you just get Rosen? Why didn't you get out? I mean, that will then open you up to, you got this quarterback to win, and you're no better. So that's the challenge here. I love the Bradley Chubb pick. I've loved it from day one. And, I see him as an 8-8 team with a chance to be, hang around to the end. But if you end up 5-11, 6-10, then you're going to be like, ooh, we had a chance to get a quarterback early. I'm not going to be that guy that questions that because I didn't see that as a realistic option for them. But again, there's two problems for me with their schedule. One, they don't win AFC West road games anymore. That's number one. Number two, they were the Clark Griswold family truckster on the road last year. Terrible. 1-7. They didn't win a road game until that Colts game.
That's right.
If you can't get to 3-5, 4-4 on the road, no chance.
Yeah, forget it.
You can't go 1-7, 2-6 on the road and be a playoff team. You can't do it.
Mm. Is John Elway, Troy, right where he's most comfortable? I'll tell you what I mean when we come back.